Welcome. This is the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast with host Rob Giannino, where we have great conversation with really awesome experts from within the fly fishing community. You see, the fly fishing lifestyle is a journey, and we're glad you're on this journey with us. Check out flyfishingjourneys.com for more podcasts, and please subscribe on your favorite podcast player. Here's your host, Rob Giannino.
Jeff Currier always has been an inspiration to me, someone I have always looked up to. Of course, there's the massive worldwide fly fishing travel with over 440 different species on a fly, but there's way more than that. It's his relationship with his wife, Granny, the kindness he offers to others at his booth and around the fly fishing shows, and his willingness to give back with his tips and advice and his presentations. When I think of the fly fishing community and what it should look like, I think of Jeff Currier. I have been privileged to get to know him at the shows and through our podcast chats. He has always been gracious with his time and his advice. It was one piece of advice he offered me and anyone really on our first podcast. Take a listen.
You fish hard, you share your knowledge with other people, the things you learn, and kind of get into the sport maybe a little deeper, make it a part of your business. So maybe you work in a fly shop. And then you work from the fly shop to, you know, teaching fly fishing. And then maybe you become a guide. I don't know. You know, it just happened to me. But that's how it went for me. And then I actually went beyond the guide and came back to the shop so I could work with people more often. You know, more bigger groups of people. And here I am.
Be sure to stop by and see Jeff and Granny at their booth at the fly fishing show. At the shows, Jeff also does presentations and casting instruction. You can purchase his artwork in person at the shows or online at flyfishingjourneys.com. Enjoy this fun chat with Jeff.
Before we jump back into the podcast, here's a short word from one of our fantastic sponsors. Are you a guide, a lodge, or a product manufacturer in the fly fishing or outdoor industry? I want to introduce you to and highlight Cross Current Insurance. Their entire team are great people and experts in their field. They have a guide insurance program that is amazing and very affordable. If you are a lodge or retailer, they also have programs tailored to your needs. These guys fish and are in the outdoors, so they know the industry and the landscape. To get more information on a program that's perfect for you, find them at crosscurrentinsurance.com.
All right, guys, welcome back to another edition of the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast and YouTube channel. So excited to have one of my favorite guests and one of my favorite people in the entire world, Mr. Jeff Currier. Jeff, thanks for being back on our podcast.
It's good to be back. Really fun.
You travel all around the world. We wanted to get an update from you of what your travels have been like over the past year. Would that be okay?
Yeah, that would be great. Well, I had a big year, I think, after I left you. Which would about probably January there. I went to fish the World Championships in South Africa.
Okay.
And we won the silver medal. That was pretty spectacular.
I heard you were pretty close to actually almost winning the gold on that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Happened so. But silver's awesome.
Silver was good, yep. But and then I came back and worked a little more. I was in Cameroon fishing in Western Africa in the jungle up there, chasing Nile perch and crazy tiger fish. I was, I went a lot of places. I was in Iceland. Actually fishing the same place that I believe you fished shortly after, fishing those giant browns. And made it to the Amazon with the Untamed Angling Guys. It was a big year. There was probably a couple, I think there was a Mexico, Seychelles, Oman. It was epic.
Well, see, now you guys are seeing and hearing why we wanted Jeff back on the podcast. And he was originally on, you can go on flyfishingjourneys.com and go back to the March 2nd, 2019 episode. And you'll hear our initial podcast with Jeff. You can hear his backstory, how he's originally a New Englander, where he's not far from me. We grew up in pretty close areas here.
Very close.
Topsfield, Mass, I think, originally.
Yep, that's right.
Topsfield, and then back up to New Hampshire, I think your folks are. And so you'll hear all that backstory about Jeff back on the March 2nd edition of our podcast. But we wanted to have you back on because you do travel all over the world. And for those that don't know, Jeff, in my opinion, has caught more different species of fish on the fly than probably any other human ever. I think our last check last year was just over 400. Our conversations, you're up to like 418 now or something?
Yep, that's right. Yeah, and that's give or take a couple. I have to recalculate that last trip to Oman. I caught a few new ones there that I wasn't expecting. I just got to get them figured out. There was two that I didn't even know what they are.
Yeah, and so he's actually going to be doing some artwork on our podcast today. What are you drawing or painting today,
Yeah,
Jeff?
So I'm doing a false albacore. Figured here in Boston and next week in Jersey, this is probably one that everybody can relate to. And
yep.
It's actually from one of our friends here, Scott, over at Vetivu.
Cool.
And yeah, I like doing these guys. You add a little color to the box. It's hard to get those cool blues and stuff because I put my blue on the box and it's yep. yellow, it turns green, but... You got to make some sacrifices when you're doing with Sharpies.
And so this is like a streamer box.
Yep, these are awesome streamer boxes.
Why don't you tell us a bit about the box here first?
Yeah, yeah, it's a streamer box actually made by a friend of mine in Casper, Wyoming. And
okay.
It's one of those boxes where you back your hooks into the slots here, so
okay.
you'll never ruin your foam. They should last your whole life. And
Cliff box.
Yep, Cliff box.
This is the bugger. And you have the finished product on this one. This is a nice little brook trout.
Yeah, did a little brookie on there. Those are a little different. I get those boxes from Scientific Anglers. And,
okay.
And those I have to kind of paint because the black box, I use paint pens.
So for those that don't know, in addition to being a world-class angler, Jeff is a world-class artist. And you can actually find Jeff Currier mugs on the flyfishingjourneys.com website. We have all 80-something different mugs that you have on there.
That's right. I think we have 80 fish, 87 fish maybe now, something like that. Ridiculous. I've been working hard.
87 different species of fish that Jeff has either caught and then painted on a mug, and you can buy them through his website and through the Fly Fishing Journeys website if you wanted to support us a little bit. But I definitely enjoy having Jeff's product on the site. When we last left you, you went on to the World Comps, and tell us about your trip on that on those competitions.
Basically, there is a Team USA fly fishing team. And there's a men's, a youth, and a master's,
okay.
the old guys. And unfortunately, I'm in the old guys now. Actually, it's pretty cool because it's much more relaxed than it used to be. I used to fish in the men's back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and it was extremely intense. And over that course of time, I became pretty good friends with a lot of folks from Europe and all over the world. But even though we were kind of friends, it was rah, 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 head-to-head competition.
Yeah.
Now... We're a bunch of retired guys and fishing together and competing. It's still very competitive, but it's much more fun. At the end of the day, we actually have a beer together and talk about how what tactics we're using and stuff. We share. So most of the guys on the team, most of the people in the competition are in that 50 to 60-year-old range.
Yep. And how do you try out? How do you, I'm going to be 50.
Yeah, so
soon. I could maybe try out.
Yep, there are tryouts for the men's.
Okay.
And that's what you'd have to go and do good. And let's say...
Like a regional or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, they do regionals in like four different places around the U.S. There's a really nice Team USA website. You can go on it and see
yep.
where they're having these competitions. And if you do well, the first year you do well, that may not get you on the team because they want to see some consistency.
Right.
And but you start getting, in the top 10, two or three tournaments in a row,
yep.
they're going to watch you.
Well, I'm going to listen to your podcast. I'm going to listen to the podcast that Devin Olson did with us last week in Denver. And
yeah,
maybe if I listen to his podcast enough times, I can become as good as Devin. I don't know if that's possible.
I understand he's pretty darn good. I haven't fished with Devin, but I'm sure if he's on the men's team, he's good.
Yeah. Great, and a great guy, too.
Yeah, he is.
We're going to take a short commercial break to hear from Tim O'Neill of Norvice.
What makes the Norvice different than another system?
There are a lot of rotary fly tying vices out there. The Norvice is the only vice that will truly spin when you tie flies, and there's a big difference between rotating a vice slowly and spinning it at a bit of a faster RPM. And being able to spin the hook on a zero-axis rotations opens up a lot of doors for us in the world of fly tying.
Tell me about the introduction of colors to the Norvice system.
When we obtained the company from Norm, he said to me just a very, very short statement. He said, I always thought a colored Norvice would be a cool item. We brought out five colors: Radical Red, Sunset Orange, Shamrock Green, Liberty Blue, and Royal Purple. We have five colors along with the black that you're accustomed to seeing with Norvice, and we've been doing very well with those.
To find more information and their online store, visit nor-vice.com.
So from the comps, you went off to Africa?
Yeah, I came back, worked a couple weeks, and then I went over and got to see Cameroon. Good friends of mine, I'm sure I'd mentioned them last year. Their company used to be called Tourette Fish It in Africa. They changed their name to African Waters. And they have like four or five really fantastic programs throughout Africa. And their theme is conservation, which is the best thing.
Yep.
They find a place, they find a way to protect it. They find a way to get the locals involved to protect it. And now they're working on a place in Cameroon. And last year was the first year that they really were able to bring some guests. And I was very lucky to be invited. So
where do you fly into?
I flew into Douala. So I flew to Paris, then took Air France down to Douala, Cameroon, which is, it's actually not their capital, but it is their biggest airport. It's on the coast. And from there, we worked our way, you know, I think I flew from there to another city and then into a city called Garoua, which is way, if you look on the map, that's a thin country. It's up on the border of Chad and the Central African Republic. You're in the boonies. Then we had a six-hour drive, and we're finally on the river.
Well, okay, let me ask you this question. Why?
Well,
I mean, Jeff, you are all over the world. You're catching all these crazy species, and now you're like multiple flights, and you're just this long drive through Cameroon, Africa.
Yeah.
Why?
I had never been there before.
It's a simple reason. I mean, you don't have to go much further than that. I hadn't been there.
Yes, I had to go. But no, number one, these Africans are really good friends of mine. And because they live in Africa, I live in the U.S., we only fish together once or twice a year. Last year, we were lucky we fished together twice a year. So I'm hanging out with my buddies and also going to another very exotic and phenomenal part of the world. You know, just incredible nature and stuff there. You know, fishing with hippos and could have seen a lion, all kinds of stuff. And the fish. There were Nile perch there, which is actually something that I have a little expertise on because I used to do the Egyptian programs over there in Fish Lake Nasser for Nile perch quite a bit, actually. And they have tiger fish, which is another one of my specialties. So
okay.
It was cool.
So when you get to your destination, this long six-hour road trip, I'm sure it's bumpy, dirt.
Yeah,
it's kind
is.
Of back dusty. Wood, dusty. When you get there, what's there waiting for you? Like this first-class lodge or kind of a tent? What are you expecting?
We were tent camping, but really nice, like, you know, almost like a hunting tent
like
you'd
a canvas?
Use in Wyoming. Yeah, exactly, a canvas. And, you know, share with one person. I think there was only four of us on the trip, so we had, you know, just two tents.
Okay, and like what type of food or how do you work out the food thing?
Yeah, we had a little chef, some of the locals that live in this area. They cook for us. And the food, I can't even remember. I don't really pay attention anymore. Otherwise, you get worried about it. But it was probably
goat
pasta and something.
Pasta and something.
Something, yeah.
Pasta and goat or something.
Yeah, exactly. But we fished so hard. It's like during the day, we just make a sandwich with leftovers from the night before and fish. And we would fish till midnight.
Okay, so what are you fishing? Rivers? Are the rocky shores? Like, what is? Tell me about this scenery.
This is a small river. The terrain is savanna, which would be, you know, I thought it was going to be jungle, but it's kind of where Africa is going from jungle to the desert. So like 200 miles from where we were is Chad, and it's a desert. Where we were was in the transition. So a lot of scrub, a lot of rock, very dry, very arid place, very hostile. Temperatures during the day, 110 degrees sometimes, and you're on rocks. I remember burning my hand a couple times, you know, when
touching
I leaned back, touching a rock. But then you're in and out of the water a little bit, so it cools you down, but you got to be careful because there's hippos in some of the pools. So
tell me, you told me about the story, but listeners have to know about this hippo story.
You know, there's hippos in the river, and when you have to cross a beach, you can't go across that beach until you know there's not a hippo there because they will attack you, and they're known for biting people in half, and I don't think anybody wants to get bit in half. So, you know, some of my African friends, they're a lot, so they know where the hippos usually are. And they're like, oh, courier, stop. Don't cross that beach. And we have to go all the way up in the forest and walk around it. And then when you're fishing, you actually have to actually be casting from the rocks because that's the only place a hippo can't get you. So you're literally sometimes standing on a rock and a hippo comes roaring up to the rock trying to bluff charge, but he knows he can't get you. And you just have to be like, sorry, buddy. I'm not leaving this rock for a while.
I don't have these problems in the Deerfield River. I can tell you this right now.
Yeah. It's a unique problem to have. And, you know, there's probably snakes and scorpions everywhere. I don't remember seeing any on this trip, but maybe there was a snake or something. I don't know.
But you told me you actually, if you want to go there fishing at night, you have to go scouting out during the day what rock you want to jump on.
Exactly.
And you can't leave that rock until you're done fishing.
That's right. Nope. You got to scope it out during the day so you don't make a mistake and end up on the beach. And when you get a big fish, actually, then it's an ordeal, and like three people have to come over and help you because at least more people will discourage, you know, a hippo or something coming to get you. But you actually have to kind of finagle your fish into the crevice of the rocks so that you can safely catch your fish and photograph it.
Without the hippos grabbing you.
Yeah, without something happening. There's crocodiles there too. The crocs there are, I think it's called the Western African crocodile. It's actually, they don't eat people with regularity. It's kind of uncommon for them. So we weren't too worried about those. But there was a lot of those too.
Tell me about the Nile perch. You caught a nice Nile perch, a huge thing.
Yeah, I got a pretty big one. They get a lot bigger, but I got a 53-pounder. when you're standing on rocks at night and you land a 53-pound fish, and it's truly 53. I mean, a lot of people would look at this fish. You look at the picture, it looks like it's 100.
Yeah.
But they weigh every fish because they're recording data to study these fish. Yeah, it's a monster. In fact, you can see it in my blog. It just, it covers me. It was incredible.
Nile perch. Okay. You released that. That's a release
pack. Everything's released. Yeah. Everything. And that's not the only fish. I mean, three different types of tiger fish. There's a fish in the river that I really love, spectacular fish. It's called the Niger barb, and he's a member of the yellowfish family, which is a whole species of almost carp-like fish, whitefish-like fish of Africa. This one here gets big. They supposedly get up to 20 pounds, but we got them in that 6 to 8 pound range, nymphing in on dry flies. And when I go back to Cameroon, which I'm not going this year, but I'll get back hopefully in the next couple of years, I got to say that I'm going to concentrate on them a little more. I really enjoy that kind of fishing.
Yeah. What do you catch a 53-pound Nile perch on for a rod? What do you need for a rod?
I was using my 12-weight Winston and kind of an intermediate sinking line and an 8-aught size fly. But the fly is just the more important thing with the fly. You have to have the big hook for the big fish, but to have something that pushes water. Niles feed at night, so they probably see pretty well in the dark, but they need something to attract their attention as well.
So like almost like a big predator fly.
Yeah, giant. Like almost, it was all kind of like a giant muddler head, deer spun head, which, kicks a little vibration and a bunch of feathers.
Do you tie that or do you buy that?
I could tie this fly. I don't tie many of my own flies. I don't have time so much anymore. But this one I could tie because really it was just a concoction on a hook.
Where do you get a fly like that?
So my South African friends, I told them, I said, guys, I'm doing the show circuit. I'm not going to bring any flies.
Okay.
Can you help me out? And they helped me out.
So your friends from South Africa supplied you with your flies for that trip?
Yep. And that's typical on their trips. If somebody doesn't want to bring flies and wants to guarantee to have the right stuff, you can put an order in ahead of time.
Okay, so you went with friends who are actually South Africa, and you guys went up to Cameroon together.
Yeah, they're starting their new thing. So a couple of the guides, Stu and Greg, they are doing an entire season there. So they had been there already for a month.
Do they have a company?
African Waters.
AfricanWaters.com?
Yep. AfricanWaters.com.
Very cool. From Cameroon, what was next?
What was next after that? I think I went back to work for a while. Then I went to Iceland, visited our friends Chris John at Fish Partner.
Very cool.
Yeah, and got into those gigantic browns on Thingivalatn, however you pronounce that.
Yeah, exactly.
Close enough.
Yes, the American version of that.
Some of the most impressive brown trout I've ever seen. And I live with brown trout. I fish brown trout all the time. That's my home fish, and these fish blew my mind. The Ice Age browns.
The Ice Age browns, and they're, anywhere from 15 to 30 pounds.
Yeah. Getting one over 20 is pretty unusual. I think my biggest was maybe 17.
Yep.
But I got a lot of fish in that 13 to 17. Just phenomenal. I mean, well, similar right
there. Yeah, there's a little lake. This is the 9-pounder we got in the little sister lake for Thingivalatn, Vinglavat.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, the big lake, they're more silver. Like, they didn't have too much brown. It was just like this incredible silver platinum body with, these crazy satin black spots.
Yep.
I need to paint one.
Yeah.
I will eventually.
That'd be cool. Paint one on one of your cliff boxes.
Yeah, I don't know if I could bring that silver out. I might have to do like a real painting.
That would be cool.
Yeah, it'd be very cool.
You do that too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I do. Yeah, I do quite a bit of custom work. If somebody catches a fish, I can do it for them.
Yeah, because I know you paint for all your mugs, you paint for the boxes, and in your shirts now, too?
Yep, that's right.
Very cool. Yeah, so I love those guys over in Fish Partner in Iceland. I fell in love with Iceland. I go with Christian and Sindri for Fish Partner for the browns and char, and then I go up north with Maddie for the salmon. But Iceland is a magical place.
It is.
Magical place.
Everybody should make a point to go there at least a couple times.
Yeah. And then, so you caught that nice, beautiful Ice Age brown.
Yeah. In fact, that trip, I got home from Iceland, and my poor wife, she didn't go on any of that travel we already talked about. So I think I was home for maybe 2.5 days, and we went down to Mexico for 3 weeks.
Very cool.
Lived off the beach and bought. I mean, I do that every year, and she gets to go about every 2 years. So
mm-hmm.
We camped and caught a gigantic rooster fish or two. It was pretty cool.
Oh, I remember seeing that. That was a huge rooster.
It's the biggest I've ever got, I think. Maybe one other time I got one that big. But you can't weigh a fish like that.
Yeah.
You just got to get it to shore, get out and hold it in the water. I couldn't even lift it.
And you waited for that fish, if I remember properly.
I only walked the beaches.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where were you?
Well, like Baja.
Baja.
Yeah. I was in Baja.
I'll get a general region. I'll get like a...
Yeah.
We won't say exactly, but it's Baja.
Yep. Yeah, and that's what I do. I walk the beaches. I don't go out in the boat.
East Coast or West Coast?
Well, they're both.
Both coasts.
That was East Coast, but They're on both sides.
East Coast. Okay. Yeah. Very cool. So you're there for 3 weeks and you're camping.
Yeah. I mean, I'm lucky. I got a buddy that has a condo down there that I rooster fish with a lot. And so Granny and I will camp, you know, 5 days straight, and then we'll go back to condo and chill for 48 hours and then head back out in the field.
Fun stuff.
That's good.
The Fly Fishing Show Tour travels the country every winter. From January until March, the largest consumer fly fishing shows in the world will be in one of six locations. The regular stops are Marlborough, Mass., which covers the New England area, Edison, New Jersey, which is the New York, New Jersey, Mid-Atlantic States show, Atlanta, Georgia, Denver, Colorado, Pleasanton, California, the Bay Area show, and finally back to where it all started in Pennsylvania at the Lancaster show. These shows are super fun events that are packed with teaching, presentations, and everything you could ever want to know or see in fly fishing. Find all the details at flyfishingshow.com.
So you can see why this guy is my mentor. My first of all, my dad thinks I'm crazy with all the fishing and blogging and vlogging and podcasting we're doing. So I guess I can blame you, Jeff.
Yeah.
Since I'm trying to catch your number here, you keep pushing that number forward.
Yeah, I think I'm going to try to push it to 500 now.
That's your goal now, five?
Yeah, why not?
What was the new species since we spoke last? What did you catch this year that was new?
Most recently, I caught an Africanus, which is the newest discovered permit. It's not really newly discovered, but it's hitting the radar of most people. But I knew about it a while ago because Granny and I were camped in Oman in maybe 2013, 2014 for a couple weeks, and I hooked and lost an Africanus after a long battle. I don't think anybody's got one from the shore, from the rocks on a fly rod, and I had this almost beat, and he came unbuttoned right near the shore, and it was a heartbreaker. But in December, I got one from a boat over in Oman. So I got my Africanus. Incredible. Super stoked about that.
How is it different? Does it like look more like an Indo permit, or what is it different about the Africanus?
He's a little bit ugly. The difference right away is this guy, he'll eat a crab, because that's what I got him on, but they actually love to eat mussels. Okay. So they go into the rocks, and I'm talking like where the waves are breaking, you know, 10 feet out and sucking back out, like the most dangerous place you could ever find yourself. Whether you're standing on shore or in a boat, because if your boat hits those rocks, you're going to shear, smash apart. But this fish will be in there, and he pounds his head into the rock, tries to knock the mussel loose, and then he eats it. So sometimes the wave will go up, and you'll see a tail sticking out, and the wave will go back out, and the permit will stay on the rock dry. Well, it's a wet rock, but it's dry for, you know, 10 seconds before the next wave comes, trying to chew this thing off.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, they're awesome.
And then where are you standing? On the rock? Or how are you fishing?
The one I hooked years ago, I was on the rocks, and I got hurt really bad, actually. But this one, I have a friend that lives in Dubai, and he's like, Curry, we're gonna go get this for you. And because I know you've lost sleep for like the last 8 years. And I'm like, yeah, I really have, Nick. So he owns Ocean Active, and he has a boat over in southern Oman now. So we went out, and I got my Africanus in the first morning.
That's cool.
It was insane. I ended up catching two.
So how do you get to Oman?
The best way to get to Oman is fly to Dubai.
Okay.
And then switch airports. There's a, I can't remember the name of the town, but there's another airport near Dubai, you know, 45-minute taxi ride. And then you fly down to Salalah. There's a few cities in Oman. Muscat's the capital, but Salalah is where the fishing is best.
And Oman is the Middle East? Or?
Yep, it's the Middle East. It's on the Indian Ocean. It has a huge coastline of about 1,000 miles. Granny and I drove every bit of it that first year, and then it butts up with Yemen on one side, Saudi Arabia on the north, and then United Arab Emirates on the northeast, I guess it would be. And it's a country, I can't remember the word for it, but it's actually split in two. So there's a northern part of Oman that butts up to the Sea of Hormuz, which is 24 miles to the Iranian border. And that is great fishing, too, right there on the top of Oman. It's called Musandam. I've been there a couple times. The place is sick.
Is it, you feel pretty safe everywhere you go?
Yeah, the Iranian smugglers are zipping by you, and you wave to them. It's actually kind of sad because, you know, they're smuggling because we've had sanctions on this country for so long. I mean, the people are suffering. And so they're going by you all day, and they're, you know, bringing anything from a microwave to maybe fresh fruit or cigarettes. That's what I saw a couple times when the boats were close enough. But now they're just peaceful. You wave. They wave back. They're doing their thing. We're doing our thing. What do they want with a fisherman?
What would you say would be the most concerned you were for your safety in all of your travels? I know you've been doing like this kind of road tripping and hitchhiking and fishing around the world ever since you were a young man. So
yeah, we've definitely run into some issues over the years, but it's nothing that I worry about. I mean, if I was doing that in the U.S., I'd run into problems too. So
yeah.
But yeah, it's they're long stories, but like Randy and I got in a bus jacking in Malawi in 2005, central part of Africa there.
I think you told us this story on the pod, yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, I've seen a... Well, I got dropped off in the Amazon one time with clients, and the clients going out, the very plane we came in crashed. And right there, only like 10 miles from camp.
Wow.
Nobody, believe it or not, nobody got killed in that.
But you know you're going to have the plane crashes. I mean, that's going to happen.
That's actually my biggest... I mean, I'm not concerned. I'm not scared of it. But if someone were to say, what do you think is going to happen to your career? I'd say probably a small plane crash going into a cool place.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully it's coming out. That's what I always say.
Yeah, hopefully it's coming out.
Yeah, I want it coming out, not in.
After your Baja trip, you came home, painted some mugs.
Yeah, did some artwork. I went and saw my mom and family up in New Hampshire. Did smallmouth fishing for about 3 weeks. I worked on the Cape. Teaching some saltwater seminars, so I got to fish the Cape last year for about 4 or 5 days. I guess the next international thing I did was possibly all the way till September before my next, and then I went down with Untamed Angling, Rodrigo Sales, and he took me to the Marie, which is their giant peacock bass river. There's a lot of rivers, and peacock bass get big, but this river, its specialty is peacocks over 20 pounds, which is... used to be unheard of, but this river has them. I got two that week. I got a 24.5-pound peacock.
Wow.
I mean, it's a big fish year.
Can you tell me that story? I just want to take a quick commercial break, if that's okay. I'd love to hear that story about that peacock bass.
You bet.
All right, so there you are on the Amazon,
yeah,
and you're in this beautiful peacock bass region. Tell me about this 24-pound peacock.
Well, I guess not a ton to say about it, other than the fact that the cute thing about this fish was that I had had an epic week. I had earlier in the week got a fish that was like 22 something. I think I had caught 9 fish over 15 pounds. Literally, I had one day where I got 16 and 18 and 19 and 22. I was just having an epic week, and Rodrigo was great enough to bring me there that, you know, I was just kind of kicking back and watching him fish. And we could see a fish that there was a flat, and every once in a while there was this nice fish that was cruising up around the flat, and Rod was casting to him. And I kept looking off to my right side because I kept thinking I saw something, and I did. And I'm like, geez, I think I see a big fish over here, Rod. You ought to cast over here. And he goes, no, I'll stick to this one. You do it. All right. Picked up my rod, stripped out some line. I watched. And all of a sudden, I saw him cutting across the flat. And I threw. And I remember when my fly hit the water, I couldn't see the fish anymore. But I'm like, yeah, maybe it wasn't a fish. And I brought it and grabbed my fly. I looked again. There, it was a fish. And I threw. This time, I hit him right in the nose. And I'm like, I got him, Rod. He goes, is it a big one? I go, it looks big. Yeah, it looks big, dude. And it was big. It was ungodly.
Huge peacock.
Yeah, 24.5. My biggest peacock prior to this trip was like 14.
That's quite a bit different.
Yeah, yeah. It was
fun?
Insane. Yeah, peacock bass fishing is one of my favorites. I love it.
Did this guy give you a good fight?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're incredible. Now, it's not a long fight.
Okay.
But the first 30 seconds is terrifying because they pull... harder than any fish I've ever hooked for the first 30 seconds. It's in that caliber. We're not, you know, not going to compare it to a marlin, but
right,
compared to a grouper or a snapper, it's the same, if not harder.
They jump?
They do, and that one jumped like 3 times.
That's fun.
Yeah.
I have yet to catch a peacock, so I got to get down to the Amazon.
You do.
What would you recommend? Obviously, Untamed?
Untamed Angling is phenomenal. In fact, I've done almost all their jungle trips.
Ken Jam
was one of my favorite places of all time.
You and Ben went to Ken Jam, right?
Yep, we did. Yeah. Yep, that was one of my favorite trips of all time. I'm going to see their newest operation. I think it's called the Shingo. It's like begins with an X. That you see it on social media a lot, and it's their Payara fishery, which I have a lot of Payara experience from being in Venezuela many years ago.
Yep,
it's a tough fish, but it's a beauty.
So they've got things dialed in pretty good with Untamed.
They got the best of the best.
Yeah. And you're a Yellow Dog ambassador, so there's all this stuff through Yellow Dog, right?
Yep, every one of those trips you book through Yellow Dog.
I want to let you know about the new travel section we have on the flyfishingjourneys.com website. Our goal and what we are passionate about is being on this fly fishing journey with you. That's why we go to the fly fishing shows and why we have started group travel with you. For the last 2 years, we have brought select friends and listeners to Iceland for curated hosted trips. We continue that with 2 weeks in Iceland this year, which are sold out, and 3 weeks in Iceland in 24, which are starting to fill up. These trips are pre-vetted for the best weeks on the best rivers. All the accommodations and details have been thought out and handled for our guests' convenience and enjoyment. This July, my good friend Tim Kamisa and I are headed to Alaska for some salmon fishing in the Bristol Bay area. I head back to Alaska in August to experience two additional lodges, new rivers, and different runs of salmon. July is more kings, chums, and sockeye, where August the target is silvers. Our goal here in Alaska is similar to Iceland, getting you the most hands-on current information. We don't have any Alaska trips to offer in 23, but stay tuned for more information for 24.
Now, can somebody get on a trip with you through Yellow Dog, or do you just kind of end up on the trip? How does that work?
No, they can. I mean, most of the trips we're talking about right now have been just like exploratory stuff, and I either go with, you know, a friend, or go with Granny, or I go with you know, the fish partner guys, for instance, with them. So I don't host a lot of trips. That being said, I do host a Seychelles trip about once every 2 years.
So if you want to get on a hosted trip with Jeff Currier, you're going to go all the way to the top, because, I mean, for me, the Seychelles is the ultimate bucket list top trip. And obviously it comes with a price tag. So
yeah,
if you're going to go to the Seychelles, you're going to be expected to come up with a couple bucks.
Yeah, you got to pay to play with Currier, I guess.
Why not? You've put in the time, right? You've walked all across the world. So it's fun stuff. So tell us a little bit about Cosmo, because, I mean, you're talking about giant GTs, tons of bonefish, milkfish.
Yep, I'll just tell you about the Seychelles in general. I mean, I've seen a lot of the saltwater destinations. I love going to Central America. It's close for me to go to Mexico or go to Belize and fishing great. But it's a whole different level when you fish the center of the Indian Ocean. The Seychelles is, you know, gets much less pressure. And that's not just fly fishing pressure. It's just there's very few local fishermen. They can't get to these outer atolls like Cosmo or Farquhar or Providence.
Right.
And then the numbers of species. You know, you go to Central America, usually it's bonefish, permit, tarpon. There are some other great stuff, some nice snook and stuff. Seychelles, I got to say, there's probably 10 different fish that you could be casting to at any given moment. You're like, you can change gears. Let's go get a grouper. Or let's go chase a trigger. What kind of trigger you want, Courier? There's three different ones. Yeah, cool, I know.
Yep.
So it's a different deal.
So fun. And you actually did a Seychelles trip this year, too, didn't you?
Yeah, we had a catastrophe. Well,
not
a catastrophe because nobody died, but we had a disaster. We got caught in a cyclone.
Yeah, I saw this on social media. You were there.
Yep, went all the way there, 11 guests. A lot of the guys, too, they're old, and they were really looking forward to this trip, and they may not get to go back. So we got all the way there, tried to fight the storm for 5 days, hoping to get a window where maybe we would blow off shore or something, and it never did.
That's a bummer. I did see that on social media. You kind of got literally blown out of that trip. So
yep.
I think the guys from Intense were coming in just behind you, and I think I saw something on social media that said it looked like the storms were going to push out just in time for their trip, which was behind yours.
But yep, the guys before us and after all made it, just us.
Bummer. Unfortunately, that's part of the deal, and it's unfortunate you're in the Seychelles when it happened, but it does happen to all of us.
Keep playing cards, you're going to lose.
One hand or two every now and again.
The other thing I do even more than that nowadays, I go to Blackfoot Reservoir and fly fish for carp. I mean, I absolutely love it, and I love the whole scene there. It's a beautiful camping spot, very remote, not many people, and those big carp are really tough to catch.
Is that Idaho, Blackfoot?
That's Idaho, yep.
Yeah.
There are some big trout in there, too. Sometimes we get a, you know, an accidental big trout. I get frustrated when they steal my crayfish from a big carp.
Now, how do you fish for a carp?
It's all sight fishing, which is, you know, great practice for your saltwater flats fishing. So I literally just walk along the shoreline and spot fish, and then I go for them and present like a, you know, really the crayfish patterns are my favorite.
How deep are they?
Geez, knee deep.
Okay.
Less.
So
yeah, they're tailing sometimes.
Okay.
Once in a while, you'll see a fish that's out in 6 feet of water suspended, but usually you're going for the ones close to shore.
Something that's going to kind of inch along the bottom of your crayfish?
Yep, exactly. It's
and then you'll see them take it, or you'll feel them?
You see them take it and feel them. I mean, they're very, you know, I became a lot better permit fisherman in the last 10 years, and I think it's because I carp fish so much. The
interesting.
Take is very similar.
Okay. Good to know, because I want to catch. I caught my first two permit this year.
Good.
Down in Ascension Bay. Thank you. It was so fun. And so they fight hard, too. Those are big fish.
Yeah, they are. The Blackfoot's famous for them being big fish, too.
Yep.
A lot of them over 20 pounds.
And you're fishing mostly Winstons?
Yeah, I'm fishing all Winston.
All Winston?
Yep.
Not mostly.
Nope, that's my company, Winston. I mean, not my company, but that's my...
It'd be nice if it was your company, huh?
I don't ever own a company.
No, because they need to have stuff to do that would be called work.
No, I just want to fish the rods, and that's my work.
What do you like about the Winston rod?
I like that their saltwater rods actually load, meaning like they're not so stiff to make this 90-foot cast. So they're good close, they're good long. And they're also better for like people that don't get to saltwater fish all the time, you know? They pick up a rod that's too stiff, and you got to get a cast 80 feet and, you know, three false casts. They can't do it. It takes them 20 false casts because the rod doesn't load.
Right.
So I really love the Winston Airs. They're just a great rod.
So that 12 weight, you can actually get to load without having to get 80 feet of line out.
That's
what
right.
You're saying.
Yep, exactly. They cast good short and long, which is what you need, because you make a lot more short casts in saltwater fly fishing than people say you do.
So, Winston rods, and do you have a particular reel that you like? Or
Bauer reels.
Bowers. Yeah, yep. I have a Bauer, yeah.
You know what I love about Bauer reels? Not more than just the incredible drag, but I never have to clean them. So, when I'm living in Oman for 3 weeks, or, you know, I'm down in the Seychelles for a month, I don't have to worry about going to the kitchen sink with a toothbrush 3 times a week
right.
or every night. I just don't worry about it at all.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
That's cool. And then lines?
Scientific anglers. Yep.
You've been using them for a while?
Yeah, I've been using them my whole life, but I've been with Scientific Anglers for almost 20 years now.
Okay.
Like, officially.
Keep hearing, you know, Scientific Angler, this is, you know, they have very specific type lines. Not like a Psy 6-foot floating. It's like they're very targeted lines.
Yeah, they do. Like, they got nymphing lines, they got streamer lines, they got, you know, special lake lines, and then all the saltwater lines. It actually can be kind of confusing sometimes, but.
Yeah.
They back it up with a beautiful catalog and great explanations.
Do you have a particular leader tippet that you prefer to use over another for different?
Yeah, I mean, I use the Scientific Angler tippet, and I find myself using their fluorocarbon most of the time. Not dry fly, but for my saltwater and streamer fishing.
For the abrasion mostly? Or
no, just the it sinks.
Okay, you'd rather have it the sinking, invisible or less visible.
Yep.
And you can pick up more abrasion resistance with the fluoro than mono. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's what they say.
Yeah, I mean, when using 40 pound, how much? It doesn't matter.
I forgot. We're not talking about 6X here.
No, we're not talking. And when I am trout fishing, I'm using just regular tippet, not fluoro.
Oh, you just use a mono.
Yeah. Yep. For dry fly.
For dry. Well, Jeff, it's been fun to have you on the podcast as well. I know you have to get back to your booth. Granny is busy there. She wants to pack up and get rolling. But,
we got a Packers game tonight, man.
Oh, your Packers are on. Just started.
6:40.
Oh, you're tonight.
Yeah.
You're looking forward to that.
Yeah, you bet I am.
And you were living in Wisconsin, which is how you become a cheesehead.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, yeah, I went to school there. Going way back, 1983 to 87.
Okay.
It's a while ago.
Musky fishing?
Yeah, I did a lot of everything fishing there. It's a great state. A lot of warm water fishing.
So, jeffcurry.com?
That's it.
JeffCurry.com and find the blog. You get an awesome blog.
Thank you. Yeah, that's what most people go to my website for, to read the blog every day.
Yeah, and you know, you're in the middle of nowhere. You know, you might be backed up a couple of days because you can't find the Wi-Fi, but
exactly.
You always get something posted when you're in the field, which is so cool. We can follow you around the world.
Yep, that's right.
And we
perfect
just
timing.
We did a lot out of line. JeffCurry.com. Jeff, thanks for being on the podcast and the vlog.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you, Rob. See you, man.
You've been listening to Fly Fishing Journeys with your host, Rob Giannino. To be notified of new episodes, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Podcasts. You can follow us on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. For past episodes, check out flyfishingjourneys.com. Fly fishing is a journey, and we're glad you're on this journey with us.